I think I do want to actually talk a little bit more generally here about representation in general. I don't know, maybe I'll even do it right now. But I think it's a pretty a serious topic. We live in a city, really the only city, I think, in America that uses a bona fide proportional representation election system in order to elect our city council and our school committee. And one of the observations, and during various times, like for example, during the years when rent control was sort of the rule, or whether there was a fight over neighborhood schools versus magnet schools or whatever, the proportionality was largely guided by the sort of the big issue of the day, right? So during rent control days, if there were two-thirds of the city was tenants who wanted to preserve rent control, you could pretty much count on there being about two-thirds of the city council being pro-rent control. But were they proportional in other matters? Were they ethnically proportional? Was there gender balance? No. I mean, sometimes I think we've peaked, we're probably peaked now in terms of representation of women on the city council. But during the years of proportional representation, did anybody ever notice that there was either zero or one woman on council for a lot of those times? If the proportion of African Americans in the city was somewhere between 12 and 15 or some percent like that, would we be always have one counselor, but not two or not zero? No. So it was never truly proportional to much of anything. In fact, I always raise the question when people tout the value of proportional representation. And believe me, I'm a major proponent of it. I think it's an important question to ask is proportional to what? Really, literally, proportional to what? I mean, if we had political parties with clearly delineated platforms, and if everybody agreed that we're going to be voting by their political parties, and then making individual selections for particular people within the framework of a candidate slate, okay, maybe it could be proportional to, this party's platform. But we don't really have political parties. We have nonpartisan elections. And we have some pretend parties. Basically, we've been seeing the rise of single issue advocacy for the last decade or so. So basically, what you have is the Build Baby Build crowd, the ABC, a better Cambridge, who basically believe in more density. Just, I would call it an unexamined agenda of increasing housing density, as my grandma used to say, irregardless of any other factors. And they sell their candidates based on the pitch that we are the pro-housing people, with a promise that somehow if you vote for our people, that somehow your housing is going to become affordable. Last I checked, it didn't happen. Yeah, there was some subsidized housing has been built here, there, whatever. But I think for in terms of the typical voter, their housing didn't get cheaper, nor did the price of a condo get cheaper. If it did get cheaper, it was not based on the actions, really. I mean, even the affordable housing overlay or even the multifamily housing, I'm not so sure that there's any really credible evidence that this is causing housing to become more affordable. Yet that was what was sold to people. So, you can sell that. The people on the other side, the Cambridge Citizens Coalition, who I believe have rebranded themselves as Cambridge Citywide Coalition or something like that, they try and sell themselves based on basically not being ABC and being more for preservation of tree canopy. I guess, and I don't think anybody disagrees with those things. It's really a matter of prioritization, I suppose. And then you got the bike people who basically say vote for bike lanes, and we don't care if you vote for so any unspeakable crime as long as you give us our bike lanes, right? So what we are seeing is, in my opinion, we are seeing a Cambridge City Council that is not proportional to the people of the city, the residents of the city, in any significant way. What we are seeing is a city council that is proportional to the clout of various advocacy groups. So you could say, okay, these are the DSA councillors because that was the advocacy group that came out to vote to push them into office. Or these are the bicycle people, or these are the density people from ABC or what have you. Okay. But as was evidenced at that public meeting after the death of Xavier Batista, there are a lot of people in the city, including especially in places like, some of the more minority oriented. I don't really like to use that word minority anymore because, what does that even mean anymore? But, like black and brown or lower income people, what have you, they do not feel as though they are particularly represented, right? Certainly not in a way that has them feeling as though they're being heard. All right. So do we have a proportionally representative elected bodies? I don't think we do. And again, I'm not going to profess any great expertise or superb familiarity with the way the school committee goes because they just don't have time for it. But near as I can tell, the school committee elections, since most of the people who vote in the city council are not necessarily people with children in public schools currently. You just do the numbers, just count them. They can't be, right? So why? What are they thinking when they fill out a school committee ballot? And the answer is they're probably not thinking about it much at all. In fact, there are a lot of blank ballots cast because they say, "I don't know who these people are." And if you have a situation like that in a city like ours, that doesn't really have the water cooler around which we gather to chat. That is to say, we don't really have a local newspaper in Cambridge anymore. No offense to Cambridge Day, but you really, it's not quite the same. It really isn't. Maybe one day you will be, but you're not there now. So, in a place where people don't exchange information very well, except maybe in some narrowly focused neighborhood listservs here, there, and whatever, where school committee matters never come up, quite frankly, because I'm subscribed to many of them and it just doesn't come up. So how do people make a decision on who to vote for school committee? Well, what happened this past year, there was a group that was, I forget, they must have had a name, but I don't remember what it was, that were largely, they were kind of driven by the, what's the statewide, Massachusetts Teachers Association and some of the union people. And what they do is they put together a slate of, I think there were seven, but there were essentially six preferred candidates. And if you're just a voter and you don't know, because you don't need to know maybe about school committee, maybe you should, but you don't feel that way. And then you get not one, but two big, glossy, multiple color cards saying these are the good guys. And you've got whatever it was, 18 or 19 school committee candidates, and then you get one card with some nice pictures that say these are the good guys. And then what happens is you end up with an election that's largely dictated by that mailing. And there were no other, I mean, individual candidates were putting out their own mailings, but basically the election results were largely purchased in that way. So are the actions and sentiments of our Cambridge School Committee particularly represent, are the members of our school committee particularly representative of the residents of the city? I don't think we're even close on that one. I don't think we're close on the city council, and I absolutely don't feel we are close on the school committee side. So let's say, oh, aren't we great and wonderful because we believe in proportional representation here in Cambridge? Maybe not. I mean, even I sometimes start to think to myself, well, maybe we would be better off with ward councillors. But as one of my very good close friends pointed out, that if we did that, there might be certain constituencies, like, for example, black residents of Cambridge, who might not muster up sufficient, like a majority or near major or a sizable plurality in any single neighborhood to elect anybody. So one of the positive aspects about proportional representation is that in principle, if you had, for at least for the city council race, if you had 10% of the population who voted, who wanted to vote or tended to vote somewhat cohesively around a candidate of a particular type, whether it was racial, gender, religious, or whatever, then in principle you could elect somebody, you know. And I think for the most part that has worked for a good while, I think, to have a representation of African Americans on the city council. But yeah, honestly, I mean, not to disparage anybody, but if you look at the representation on the city council, do you say, is that really what you see when you walk the streets of Cambridge? I'm not so sure it is, you know. Of course, there is the even bigger question that should be raised at both the local level, state level, and federal level, which has to do with candidate selection. Do you really believe in the 2024 presidential election that the two people who were the principal party candidates were the best and brightest of the country for each of those parties? I don't think so. You know, so we have a problem. Just we have a democracy problem in this country. You know, and it starts with the incentives and disincentives for candidacy. I like to point out, I said the people who want the job the most tend to be the people you least want to have the job. Not always, of course, right? But you know, the most eager candidates are often the people you really got to watch out for, quite honestly. You know, so I think we're broken up at the congressional level. We're certainly broken up at the presidential level, but I think we're also broken at the do you listen, I mean, maybe I'll talk a little bit here about the local elections again, but you know, I'll be having to make a choice, or I could blanket, I suppose, for my state representative, who is currently this guy named Mike Connolly, and who's really a gung-ho socialist in all of his orientation, and I'm definitely not a socialist. So I don't like him as a candidate. I don't like him as a representative. In fact, most of his colleagues don't like him as a representative because he gets nothing through, right? He's thoroughly ineffective. He does have a challenger this year, which is in itself kind of rare, a guy named Neil Miller, who I believe lives in Cambridgeport. But he's very, very much tied to the ABC, the A Better Cambridge group. And I do agree with some of the ideas about we need some more housing, but I think we should be doing it more thoughtfully and based on opportunities as opposed to broad brush solutions, which is what the ABC people do. They don't think at all, they just impose. So what's my selection? If I choose to vote at all in my representative district, do I pick the socialist or the YIMBY? Well, I don't want to choose a socialist or a YIMBY. I just want a rational human being, you know, who's going to be somewhat, at least somewhat, or occasionally representative of the way I want to do things, you know. But where are the incentives for people to run for office? You know, you either got to have a lot of gelt, you know, you got to have a lot of money ready to do it, or you have to be part of some big advocacy group. Look around the country with a lot of people who are DSA affiliated. They have a lot of incentive to run right now. You know, a lot of more what I would call regular folks, they have a lot of disincentives to run. So you tend to have a disproportionately high number of people running from certain orientations, at least right now, because that's sort of like the in thing, you know. So anyway, not to belabor the point too much here, but you know, maybe there was a day we as Americans could go around the world touting democracy and showing people how to do democracy. I have a friend who worked for a United States agency in the former Yugoslav Republic, where they were training people in democrat to develop democratic institutions after many decades of totalitarian, exactly, but authoritarian rulers. And it wasn't easy to teach democracy, but at least as an American, you had some credibility that you would be talking about something you maybe knew something about, or maybe could speak with some authority about. I don't know that anybody around the world would listen to an American giving a workshop on democracy anymore. Because, and I don't know that I would listen to such a workshop anymore. I think I could learn more about democracy by listening to some people coming here from Europe or many other places in the world, less so America. And honestly, I kind of used to like, especially since we were the only place that did proportional representation. I said, well, maybe we can show the world, right? But even we here in Cambridge are not doing it very, very well. You know, we're sort of failing at our own system here in Cambridge. You know, now I don't know. What do you do? What's the remedy for that? Do you develop more cohesive parties? There was a kind of a hope that some folks would recreate the old Cambridge Civic Association, and maybe some countervailing force would then redevelop. But that seems to have at least dissolved, at least temporarily, if not forever. We'll see. I'd like to actually see it get revived, but I'm just not so convinced that it really will. You know, so anyway. So you could get me going talking about representation and representativeness all day long, quite honestly. Let's maybe sort of move on a little bit here. A couple of things that did happen at the August 3rd City Council meeting that I think are at least worth noting is because they're somewhat symptomatic of a problem, in my view. So there were on the agenda, there was the sixth annual Cycling Safety Ordinance Progress Report, written by the proponents of the Cycling Safety Ordinance. Do you think there was going to be any critical analysis in that report? I don't think so. There was also the 2026 annual report of the Affordable Housing Overlay, written by the proponents of the Affordable Housing Overlay. Do you think there was going to be any kind of critical analysis about the effectiveness of the Affordable Housing Overlay, or whether there are alternatives that might actually be a better way of creating affordability and affordability in ways that matter more? I don't think so. They also had a report from the city manager in response to a city council order about opportunities to streamline the permitting process. So I think that's principally permitting for residential and commercial, you know, new buildings. So, I mean, I've heard some people I know who are in the development community who say talk about how nightmarish it can be, including where you can get signed off on this, and then at the very end, they'll say, "Oh, I'm sorry, this doesn't meet the zoning requirements." Don't you think that should have been worked out first? You know, so we don't we. I don't think we really do all of our permitting processes particularly well. Maybe there's some hope we'll do it better. But if the sole goal is to simply to whisk through projects, whether they're good, bad, or disastrous, just for the sake of speed, I don't know that that's necessarily a good outcome either. They did also have at the August 3rd meeting, they queued up some edits to the Massachusetts Avenue active use zoning petition and the Cambridge Street active use zoning petition. In our typically Cambridge very prescriptive way, we're sort of trying to, through zoning, invent ways or require there to be things like street level retail, at least on buildings over a certain size. It's a very laudable idea, but I can show you examples all around the city where mandated retail is basically just a storefront that you almost wish it wasn't even there, you know, because it's not really effective. And, you know, and one little dilemma we have never seemed to figure out is that if the reason why, if you want to, if you believe in things like affordable retail or a diversity of retail for different price points and whatever, we don't have a mechanism for making that happen. You know, so if you've got a property owner who just wants to get top dollar, you know, from a retail location, you mandate that retail location. That it's not like mom and pop are going to be open up a candy store there. You know, chances are it's going to be just a big money maker, and slowly but surely, the gentrification of your city is carries on unabated. You know, so sometimes I think that legislative ways of trying to force economic outcomes, even if very well intentioned, are largely wrongheaded ultimately. But I don't know. Miracles can happen. Maybe something nice will come of it. There was also a city council order asking the city manager to basically create a mechanism for cooperation amongst all the city agencies to revive a Central Square World's Fair. Now I have t-shirts for the old Central Square World's Fair. I used to go to all the Central Square World's Fair. Major credit goes to John Clifford, who was associated with the old Green Street Grill. He has since passed away, sadly. But they pulled off some, especially with the international foods people, pulled off some incredible gatherings in Central Square with like multiple music stages. It was wonderful, really. And the people with the Central Square Business Improvement District have been promising me they're going to get a revived Central Square World's Fair for the last couple of years, but it hasn't happened. So I kind of hope it'll happen, but it's obvious it's not going to happen this year, but hopefully next year it will. And I think it would be a great thing, you know. And by the way, anybody didn't notice, this Cambridge River Festival seemed to have just disappeared this year. I was told it was going to be broken up into several festivals around the city, but I don't know that they ever really came to fruition. You know, I don't know, maybe we really are just a little short on cash and resources, and maybe the city is quietly just letting a few of them slip by for that reason. There were also some orders calling for, they actually wanting to allow certain liquor license establishments to serve alcohol till 3 a.m. You know, so you can get a 1 a.m. license, a 2 a.m. license. Hi-Fi Pizza used to be able to get a beer up till 3 a.m. You know, it's gone now. It's a Clover, you know, but you know, I have no objection to that. You know, apparently the state legislature also passed a raft of reforms to give cities and towns some extra flexibility for loosening up some of these restrictions. It's not like we're going to become New Orleans and Mardi Gras right away, but honestly, I think a little fun isn't such a bad thing, you know. But they also talked about reforming and modernizing the license commission, which consists of the executive director, the fire chief, and the police chief, and they're the ones who make the cast the votes on various licensing. I don't think that's a bad system, by the way. So if you want to come up with a reform or a better way to do it, make it better. Don't just make it different, you know, because how it works right now may not be perfect, but it works. And if you want to reform it, just be thoughtful about how you go about doing so. There was another thing. Again, I hope this doesn't sound just too much like miscellany, but there was a city council order calling for citywide digital wayfinding and a network of information kiosks around Cambridge, right? Now these would be sponsored kiosks, you know, with some, you know, just like we have the bus shelters have sponsors, so the city doesn't pay for them. And I thought, you know, that's kind of good. I mean, I can't tell you how many times people come up to me and say, which way is this or whatever. Of course, now they just talk to their damn phones, right? You know, and I walk right up to them. I go, can I help you? And I go, and they look at me like I'm about to assault them or something. Just trying to help, that's all. But so people are talking about putting up information kiosks. I said, okay, in principle, not a terrible idea. But if there's one thing I've never particularly liked about Cambridge is that it seems like there's a, you know, it's that old sign, everywhere sign, blocking out the scenery, breaking my mind. I think those are the lyrics. You know, you can't go 12 feet on a Cambridge street without having a sign, you know, regulating parking, street cleaning, snow emergency route, don't block the bike lane, this, da 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 da, you know, and maybe we have too many signs. Maybe we ought to first pass an ordinance minimizing the number of signs, reducing the number of signs, and then we can put up some kiosks, you know. So let's I hereby amend the order calling for a decluttering of signage in the city, and then we can reclutter with something more useful, perhaps. All right. So anyway, so that's a bit of a mix of what's been happening here. I'll just say a couple of quick things. So the primary election is actually early. It's before Labor Day this year. It's Tuesday, September 1st, I believe. Yes. Early voting. Today is August 18th. Early mail-in voting is already currently happening. the early voting, where you can actually show up to vote early, that commences August 22nd and continues through August 28th, right? And you know, certainly classic Massachusetts tradition is that we have a lot of people running unopposed, but because there were some people vacated their seats, like Pat Chalin vacating her state Senate seat, so then some people move to that, and then that was it, Matt McLaughlin then vacates his seat, and then some people are going to go for that, you know, so there's a little bit of re you know, shuffling the deck chairs on the deck of on the Titanic. So anyway, so that's all happening. You know, people are handicapping some of the races, but there's no real polling to speak of, except maybe the Markey Moulton race so far. And this is just the primary election. It's still a November election, but you know how it is in Massachusetts. For many elections, the outcome is determined in the on a typically lower voter turnout primary election for whoever the Democratic nominee is, and then that person just walks in. So I don't know that that's what happened in the governor's race this year. There's a lot of push from the Republican side, and we have been known to elect Republican governors, you know. But we do have some of these other races, and again, I'm not going to go on in length about these. But probably the most featured ones would be the 25th Middlesex, where Evan Mackay is again trying to challenge Marjorie Decker. And again, I said I make no secret out of the fact that I don't think there's a whole lot of substance to Mr. Mackay. And even if I've disagreed with Marjorie on many, 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 many things, she is by far the more qualified candidate. And I've mentioned earlier on the 26th Middlesex, it's Connolly versus Miller, socialist versus YIMBY. I haven't decided whether I'm going to blank that one or not. The second Middlesex Senate, which was Pat Chalin's seat, I'll sort of wrap it up on this one here, I think, is that I actually neglected to mention the leading candidate a month ago was Christine Barber. Who, based on where she lives and where the majority of the district is, some people believe she is the favorite at this point. But Christine Barber is facing Matt McLaughlin from Somerville, current Somerville City Councilor, I believe, Burhan Azim, Cambridge City Councilor, and Erica Oyterhoven, who I believe is a state representative from Somerville currently. So you got, you know, a four-way race there. And again, it sort of relates to the proportionality question: is what proportion of the district is where they live, and or whether somebody like Mr. Azim can pull out all the ABC adherents in Cambridge to tilt the balance by getting a disproportionate amount of Canterburgians who are supporting housing density show up. Who the hell knows, honestly? But anyway, that's a comment. And the last one I'll mention here, just because I'm going to express my point of view, is that I have nothing personally against Marianne Ryan and her job as a district attorney, but I do have some issues with the fact that we allow a lot of the shoplifting and other degradation that really has done great harm to Central Square to go forward. And every time I hear from Cambridge Police about it, it's like this district attorney's office just doesn't prosecute when they really should be. And they don't even intervene in helpful ways when they should be. So David Solette, who is also from Cambridge, I might add, is running as an alternative. And again, I'm not here to endorse candidates per se, but I'm voting for David Solette on that one as well. So anyway, on that note, I think I'm going to wind this one down here, and hopefully I'll be back in a couple of weeks if I don't punt, but I'm going to do my best to try and come back and do the next show. So anyway, until then, I'll see you later here from Cambridge Inside Out.